Support for WPR comes from Present Music, performing honest music with guest violist and curator Nadia Sirota, May 9th at 8 at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Tickets and info are at presentmusic.org.
And Strange Champs interviewed Colby Bazell over 4 years ago, after Colby returned from his first tour of duty in Iraq. As a machine gunner in a striker brigade in Mosul, Colby saw a lot of heavy combat. He spoke in that interview about wanting to sort out what happened in Iraq, about getting it back together and taking advantage of the GI Bill for college. That was then. This is now. Diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder and struggling with addiction, Colby Bazell's war continues. Anne sat down once again with Colby to talk about what it's like living with PTSD.
I don't know. I mean, at first, you think everything's normal, and then you just notice things that you're doing that you don't realize you're doing it at the time. Like, for me, it was just the big thing is I just locked myself in my room. I was living in Los Angeles at the time, in a small studio, month-to-month apartment, and my routine pretty much every day was to the liquor store and back. I would go back to my room and just drink, and that was pretty much what I did every night. I mean, a couple times I'd be like, hey, wait a minute, I haven't left my apartment really in about a week or two. And I would try to leave and go on a walk or go somewhere else or go to a restaurant. And I don't know, it's just this feeling of I just want to go back to my room. I just want to lock the door and just stay in my room.
Were you having extreme anxiety attacks if you left, or were you just so depressed you pretty much didn't want to do anything?
Both. If I was around other people, I'd want to get away from that. I'd want to just be by myself. Yeah, I just wanted to spend the majority of my time just absolutely by myself. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I didn't want to be around other people. I mean, it's little small things, like you'd be at a restaurant and you'd look around and you'd just be like, whoa, these people are totally oblivious that there's something going on right now in the Middle East, that there's like, you know, 150,000 troops over there right now, you know, going out on missions, doing this and that. And these people, you know, you come back and you see how everything's just, life goes on and everything's normal and like nothing is really going on. And it's like, you know, the war's like invisible to everyone.
Did you feel angry at those people in the restaurant? You know, that while you were out risking your life and nearly getting killed so many different times, they were just there eating in their restaurants?
Yeah, it took a long time to adjust to that. Yeah, I mean, even friends and family sometimes, you know, they're oblivious to it and they just sort of bottle it up inside of you, especially if, like, you know, you meet someone and they go, hey, you know, what have you been up to? Oh, I was in Iraq. I always feel like, you know, A, I'm immediately judged for that, or, you know, I have to justify my decisions for joining the military, going over there. You know, it's always followed up by, you know, why in the hell did you do that? Or how could you, you know, participate in something like that? And that would just automatically make me want to go back and lock myself in the room.
What did you do in the room?
Just drink and stare at the walls, pretty much, chain smoked. I mean, on my computer, I'd have old pictures of, you know, the pictures I took while I was over there, and, you know, the friends I made in the Army and, you know, my time there and videos. You know, sometimes I'd stare at that, and I tried not to because it just reminded me, but mostly it's just numbing myself to everything. Hmm. That's pretty much what I did for a while.
I want to play back a little of the interview we did 4 years ago. At that time, you were feeling kind of overwhelmed by everything you'd lived through, and I asked you how you were dealing with it. And you told me this story about a really hard day you had had in Iraq. You'd lived through an ambush, and something your sergeant said to you.
Right after the ambush, we went back to the base, and we were all loaded up and ready to go back out. And I wasn't really in the mood to going back out, especially since it was nighttime, and that's, like, really scary, because you really don't know what's going on, and then that's the confusion. And my friend Sergeant Vance saw me sitting by myself and came over and sat next to me, and, you know, me and him talked about what was going on. I told him my fears, and his dad was in Vietnam, and he said, you know, the advice he gave him for situations like this was to put all the events, you know, put everything that bothers you and clogs your head up at night and put it in a shoebox, put a lid on it, and deal with it later. You know, you've got a job to do, just deal with it later. And, looking back, that's kind of what I did with the whole the whole war. I mean, you know, and it's all kind of in a shoebox kind of for me.
So here it is 4 years later. I guess it's later. Have you opened the shoebox?
No, I mean, at times and stuff, but no, it's like how one, this other veteran told me once, you know, you just got to look at your time in the military and your experience over there as like just a chapter in your life that's over and move on. You know, that's what I've been trying to do.
Hmm. You know, there's been a fair amount of coverage in the press about the high percentage of returning vets with post-traumatic stress disorder. The statistics don't really convey what it's like on a daily basis to live with PTSD. What's your own experience, Ben?
Well, everyone's different. I mean, for me, I mean, there's not a VA hospital in this country where I can't walk into and have them evaluate me and say, yeah, you've totally have PTSD. You know, they ask you a series of questions like your sleep pattern, how much you drink, how often do you think about the war? Was there anything over there happened to you over there that, you know, you felt like your life was in danger? Questions like that. You watch the movies and, you know, it's like the guy has flashbacks and he's unable to function. And just for me, it's just turning to substances so I can numb myself. I try not to talk to anyone about it. You know, now when somebody asks me what I've been up to or anything like that, I'd hardly ever tell anyone that I was in the military or was in the Army just because, you know, I don't like talking about it because no one will understand or get it or, you know, I'm scared of what questions they'll ask after I tell them. So just for me, it's just keeping everything inside and just, you know.
You've also written about a kind of ironic and sort of awful postscript to your tour of duty. You know, you were back trying to get your life together, and then the Army called and said it wanted you back. And first of all, I mean, given your level of dysfunctionality, that must have seemed just incredible to you. And also, you weren't expecting it. You'd sort of had the impression that you and the Army were done with each other. So what happened?
Well, I still get phone calls from the Army, like at least once a week, you know. It's kind of like a telemarketer doing pressure sales, trying to get you to reenlist and voluntarily go back into the Army. And now when they call, I just tell them, you know, yeah, I would really like to do that, except for, you know, I have no legs. You know, I lost my legs in Iraq. And then they'll say, look, I'm sorry, you know, and they'll quickly hang up. But, you know, they always try to pressure you into enlisting.
Well, you actually did at one point. I mean, you wound up back at Fort Benning, right?
Well, I got a letter in the mail, you know, requesting my presence at Fort Benning. When you sign a military contract, there's this wording in the contract where it says that they can call you back at any time within 8 years. At that time, I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to school. I have this GI Bill. You know, it's my third time trying to go back to school. I mean, the GI Bill, and there's so much paperwork involved, and it's such a headache trying to get it started that usually I just give up. But like this time, I was like, okay, I'm definitely going to go back to school no matter what. I'm going to use my GI Bill. I'm going to straighten my life together. I'm gonna do this. And you know, I signed up for the classes and was all set to go. And all of a sudden, I get this letter in the mail saying that I have to go back to Iraq. Yeah, and then I went to the VA hospital, got evaluated, and showed up to Fort Benning, handed him my, you know, medical evaluation. They were like, yeah, you can go home now, kind of thing. But that was it. It's weird. Like, you get out of the military and there's no, like, you know, from my experience, the only contact you get from them is to get you to reenlist or go over there. I mean, there's, you know, they don't really do anything other than that for returning veterans that I've seen.
How long were you in Iraq?
Too long. No, I was there for about a year.
Because it just strikes me that, maybe it strikes you this way too, that you've been at home messed up for longer than you were actually in Iraq.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you think the war's over once you land, you know, back home, but it's like what one time I was in Georgia at a bar outside of Fort Benning, and there was a guy that just came back from his second deployment, and he was getting wasted at the bar, and I sat down next to him and started talking to him. He said he just got back, and, you know, we're talking about our experiences being back, and he said something to me. You know, he's all drunk, and his head was down on the bar, and, you know, he could barely talk, and he said something. He said, this is the worst part. And I kind of looked at him, and he's like, this is the worst part, coming home. You know, and he looks around the bar and he goes, no one here gets it. No one here will understand. And You know, he's kind of right. You know, I never forgot that. You know, the worst part, you know, is kind of coming home.
Colby Bazell speaking with Anne Strangechamps. He served in Iraq as a machine gunner for a striker brigade combat team. A collection of Colby Bazell's Iraq War blog entries can be found in his book called My War.